Good yes. morning, Tom.
Good morning, Marlenka.
It's so nice to be here with you and talk about this wonderful, favorite, and important topic, water.
Yes. Yes. So it's a bit overwhelming sometimes.
So you're with the Oroville Water Service. Can you say exactly what that does?
No, I am not with Oroville Water Service. It's all right. But with Oroville Water Group.
Oh, excuse me.
So no, it's important because it's like each of these units, entities, is having a specific role. For example, Oroville Water Service, as far as we know, is specialized in distribution and I would say commercialization of water.
Mm-hmm.
They sell water and then with that they run their service. I mean,
sell water? Excuse me.
Who do they
sell it to? I thought water
was... To the people who are connected to their network.
Right. So we get a water bill. And, of course, in some communities, that is incorporated with our monthly contribution. So we don't see it as that we're being charged for water.
That I don't know. Then after
but we are.
Comes back to the community. But, for example, now I live in Vocation 4, and now I pay the bills every month. And it's the first time almost in my life that I pay a water bill. No, I had in the past when I was in Europe, because in Europe it is a predominating form of management, no?
Mm-hmm.
But here in Oroville, this has been imposed on the community without, I would say, a deliberate choice from the community to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, even quite a few people are unhappy with that form of development.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, it keeps going. And it would be an opinion, but it's a bit forced on the community because some people do feel that this is the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
But the only problem is that this way to go is belonging to the past. It has been experienced all around the world in many forms, but commercialization of water, saying that water is a commodity and that we have to provide that commodity to the people, is a bit short-sighted, is a bit narrowing the ample thing that is water. Water is not a commodity. Water is much more than that. It's the basis of life.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, we just had we were blessed by the visit of Rajender Singh, you know, this mm-hmm. Waterman of India. And throughout his various presentations he gave in Oroville, you know, he went to different places and all that. And then he gave, he put a strong emphasis on the fact that water belongs to nobody in particular.
Like air.
Like Oroville, you know. So it's so important that we remind this and that we never forget this. Water does not belong to anyone in particular.
Mm.
So, of course, distributing water has a cost. So one can say what we are billing is the price of distributing that water, producing it to the surface and distributing it to the users.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I would say fair. But since the price and the breakdown of the cost price is not published, one doesn't know.
Why is it not published?
I don't know. I mean, this unit has a long track record of shadowing all operations, shadowing all informations. And it's a bit annoying. I just say like that. It's annoying because it's useless. Useless, and it puts a perspective on the development of Auroville that does not lead us nowhere. Mm. I mean, there is nobody owner of a water unit that has the right to turn it into something hidden.
Well, ordinarily, when something is hidden or appears to be hidden, there's some reason in the shadows for that. Are you suggesting that with the Auroville Water Service, there's some reason why they... Is it an oversight? Why would they not share their info?
Yes, no, there might be there a kind of a hidden agenda. That means they have their own agenda.
That's what I mean.
And they are driving it the way they like, regardless of all what is being said to them, the different things. So, I don't know. For me, the point is more that by such an approach, you are concentrating only on one aspect mm-hmm. of the water cycle. And for example, what came through of this visit of Rajender Singh is that aspect that you have to be respectful of the entire cycle. That means if you place yourself in the water cycle at a certain point, you will borrow water from nature for your own needs and restitute this water in whatever form, be it wastewater, be it irrigation, be it evaporation, being sweating with your own body. But you must restitute this water clean. You took it clean. Why should you send it back to nature dirty? So this is one aspect. But in the case of a commercial unit, you know, that plugs itself attach itself inside the cycle, mm-hmm. just take water, regardless of the source, of the replenishment of that source, is nature able to supply all what is taken, and what do we do?
But Tom, let me ask you this. Isn't there a cycle that when we take water, no matter what we do with it, how we use it, it does cycle and it does return?
Agreed. That's a bit what I say. You see, like, my emphasis is water will anyway return to the sea.
Exactly.
Or to the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Basically, it's two domains. And then, if you restitute dirty water, then nobody else can use that water that you have been using.
But what about the cleansing of the water, for instance, in wastewater treatment plants?
Okay, we are...
That's not really totally cleaning it. I mean, we wouldn't turn it in... We're not able to turn that wastewater into potable water, are we?
Technically, it's feasible.
It is feasible.
Yeah, it is possible. People are doing it in some places where they could overcome cultural blockages or different problems that are faced. But the main thing being cultural problems. But there are many potential uses for retreated water.
Yes.
That can be from irrigation, from usage of, let us say, raw water in a system, mm-hmm. be it a house, be it a big building or whatever. You have, you see, the point, water, we always think of it in terms of quantity. And now we are forced to consider it in terms of quality. Mm-hmm. Because a certain kind of water can be utilized because its quality matches our needs.
So could we go so far as to say that recycled water, wastewater treated properly, could be used for anything except drinking, except for intake in the cooking and in the drinking? I mean, in the washing machine, in the toilet, in the washing of clothes, everything, it could be used.
Not for the laundry. I don't think we have reached that level.
Oh.
At least in Auroville. For the gardens, yes. You see, now we have a debate going on in the circles of water management. Which standards do we follow? So, of course, our natural way would be to follow the Indian standards. And this is what we do or try to do. But at the same time, there is another line of thoughts that says that, for example, certain standards that are valid for drinking water mm-hmm. are very stringent, of course. Mm. And those going for irrigation water are, of course, less stringent. So, for the time being, we have, let's say, if we consider just the drinking water needs, for the time being, we are okay with the groundwater, which gives us a good quality drinking water.
Okay, this might be a good point for me to ask about that, because I'm under the impression that we have a very limited amount.
Alors, when I say presently, I'm talking of the present.
Just this moment.
This moment, let us say, with a time span of 2-3 years. We don't know more than that.
That's not much.
No, that's not much. It's true. You see, for the time being, our vision is a bit stuck. Mm-hmm. In this time frame, we have very few people in Auroville able to extend their vision more than that. You see, we can, because after, you see, it goes into speculations, because we do not have any. There are source of data that we do not master, so we cannot predict. Mm-hmm. You cannot predict meteorology. We are meteorology is in a total turmoil because of this climate change. Mm-hmm. So climate change, the name says it, mm-hmm. and then the hydrogeology of a system like the one we have mm-hmm. here. Is quite complex, because as we know, we do not have only one aquifer, you know, that would be kind of a reservoir and very clearly defined. No, we have three aquifers behaving totally differently one to the other.
Three is the total number in Auroville.
Yes, we have three geological layers that are considered as aquifer.
Okay.
We have more, but the others are aquitard, like Mana Valley clay, like Otay clay. They do not restitute the water as freely as an aquifer does, mm-hmm. because an aquifer is characterized also by its porosity. That means the more it is porous, then the more the water travels inside. Mm-hmm. So it's important that we have a clear definition of what is an aquifer. An aquifer is something that you can exploit, that you can utilize to provide water, because the water is really coming to it. When you punch a hole, a borewell in it, then once you extract water, then the water keeps coming. Mm-hmm. But if you are in an aquitard, the water travels very, very, very slow. And so you pump water, and then it takes ages before the water comes again to the well, which gives very small yields that are hardly exploitable. Mm. And so, where are we? We are with a source of water. So, very often, the guy who sells water, like even the guy who sells water in bottles, does not care of what the amount, total amount, he will extract from the ground. He does not care if it affects his neighbor. We have a case near our orchard, you know, where, for example, on Sunday, the water table goes up because the bottling factory is closed. And during the week, the water goes down and they have problem pumping. So you see, it's all these factors. But what is important is that I want to go back to our vision. I mean, the vision that is kind of proposed and advocated by the water group is that we should have something, what we say, sustainable. That means that the water we extract, we have to reach, let's say, a certain balance between what we take and what the nature receives. So now we are talking of groundwater. That means when it rains, a certain percentage of this rain manage to penetrate the ground, and another percentage manage to reach the water table. Because some water on the way down gets somewhat fixed as humidity inside the aquifer.
Okay.
But this water is humidity that is not directly available as a liquid. Because
it's present, but it can become later with
it
time.
It can become if the density increases.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's humidity that sticks to the grains of sand, to the whatever is inside the formation.
Mm-hmm.
You see, you take a piece of rock or a piece of sand, enfin, a heap of sand, for example, you can have the sand wet, so that means water will almost like ooze at the base of the heap of sand. Then after the sand is humid, that means if you go inside, you take some sand, it's humid. Or it can be dry. You see, after if you leave a piece of a heap of sand in the sun, after some time, it's totally dry. So that means there is no more water in it. So the top layers, at least, are like that. You see, and then that's why the trees, in certain conditions, can survive, because their roots go deep. But when this drought, this dryness penetrates, then after some time the roots have nothing to feed. And they die.
They die and the tree falls over.
And the tree ultimately will fall over, yes.
So
just to conclude, for us, a system, a form of water management is sound only when it considers the entire cycle. That means when it caters for the recharge. You see, for example, we have this carbon footprint, no? This so-called thing. We should have a water footprint. That means you take water. What do you do to replenish the water you have taken from the ground? And this is essential.
I see that. I wanted to ask your opinion about something that seems very obvious to me, the catchment of rainwater. Why that's not going on with every single building having a gutter, piping it down to an underground tank that will lead to the aquifers, for one thing. Or the other idea I'm curious about is, how can it be that seemingly so many people are in denial about the shortage of water, about the impending water crisis?
So, regarding the first question, the rainwater harvesting, you have two ways. One is infiltrate the water into the ground, where it will ultimately be pumped from the water table.
Mm-hmm.
And the second is to put that water, to store it, into some containers. Can be a big tank, can be a small tank, whatever.
That's what I was
thinking. Can also be a surface water body. So, if it is in a surface water body, you will be faced with a lot of evaporation, which is sometime and quite often more than the annual rainfall.
Wow.
Yeah, because we get the rain in a certain period. So, when we speak of rainwater harvesting, we are speaking of usable rain. A rain that is that can be handled. For example, if you look at the rainfall of 2019, you get a lot of small events, like 2 millimeters, 3 millimeters, 4 millimeters. And sometime, you know, there was a period that when we got even 10 millimeters or 13 millimeters, we had the impression that finally we got rain.
Mm-hmm.
But that's nothing. You can't do anything with that. It just gives a bit of a wetting to the surface.
Doesn't go
and
deeply.
If the frequency is sufficient, it will keep your surrounding green. But in terms of rainwater harvesting, it's almost useless. So you see, you need rain at a certain intensity, like 2 centimeters, that means 20 millimeters, 50 millimeters, 100 millimeters is already something good. But these are the only, 80, 100 are the rains that have a chance, if they're long enough, to reach the water table. The rest will not reach. So it's important to notice that you have to create a regional development with a lot of green cover in order to help get better rains. I'm talking of the quality of the rains there.
Let me ask you what that means, really. I don't understand.
Alors,
a quality, you're saying a green cover that will assist in getting the good quality.
Exactly.
Rain.
Because
such as, I mean,
if you take the Amazon, for example, the Amazon now is dry. The river Amazon, that used to be a monster of a river, is dry. You have bench of sands, you know. The boats cannot sail into certain areas,
mm-hmm,
because there is not any more water. Why? Because of deforestation. You see, during the day, the trees are evaporating. And then this evaporation gives, let us say, 40% to the humidity contained in the air. The other 60% are the humidity coming from the sea.
Mm.
I'm not 100% sure of the percentage, but I think it's in that
roughly
range.
Mm-hmm.
But the principle is that you need the combination of the rain coming from the sea, mm-hmm. or the humidity coming from the sea, with the addition of the humidity coming from the land to get your trigger zone. That means when you have such a saturation of humidity that the rain starts falling. So in the Amazon, you know, it was like that. During the day, hot and humid and all that, and then in the evening around 4, 5 o'clock, downpour. That would stop when the night comes, because there is a change of temperature in the system. And then next day the same, and next day the same. So you see, it's, and then one would say, you know, but yes, I have 60% coming from the sea and 40% coming from the land. So, and then the difference is 20%. And this 20% is the water that you can utilize. And the water that goes to the rivers, mm-hmm. and the rivers bring it back to the sea. And then on the way, you can take out of it. So therefore, it's important to, you see, like the work done by the people of the Green Belt and all that, mm-hmm. should be intensified to the maximum and extended as far as we can reach. That's why it's important to consider this regional development.
Mm-hmm.
Because to have a nice forest, you know, over 25 square kilometers, it's beautiful. But I would say it's cosmetic.
Oh.
Because you do not reach a mass that can be considered by nature to trigger. You see, everybody says you have to match climate change, you have to consider microsystem. But then you should not be shy, you know, and consider micro your own garden. At the level, you know, of nature like that, I don't say you should consider the entire Tamil Nadu. You may, but then you have to sum up all the initiatives that can be taken by different microsystem managers. Mm-hmm. If everybody does it, you know, of course, at one point it will impact. But at the same time, it's it's a huge thing. And it involves management. It involves getting people to do it.
Okay, so now we come to the crux of the matter, mm-hmm. and that's that the people need to be educated, enlightened. They have to
Absolutely.
Get this information. We cannot expect that they will do it on their own. So perhaps children learning it in school, very young ones, in time, they will be in a position to make an impact with their knowledge. It may be too late is the question that many of us pose. How much time have we got?
No, you see, it for nature, for the planet, mm-hmm. it's not too late. For humanity, it may be.
Uh-huh.
But for nature, you see, we might bring the point up to the point where we disappear. And then, maybe, how to say, nature will finally breathe and say, ah. Now we can do something. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the main concern is humanity in all this. You see, we are very selfish, you know. We know that it is our survival that is at stake.
But
nature will always survive in one form or another, and then maybe recreate something different.
Of course. What it seems so astonishing is that many people are in denial that we, in fact, humanity, are creating all the problems.
Yeah, it's an ostrich vision. You know, like people prefer to stay in front of their screen and instead of looking through the window and eventually open the door of the apartment or of the house and just go out to see what is really happening.
Mm-hmm.
If you feed, it depends what you feed yourself with. You know, I don't know if it's correct to say like that, but what do you give your brain to compute?
Mm-hmm.
So, if you look around, you know, and then before you spoke of education, it's the same story. You see, like kids, you can give them water class at school. And it will be useful, because I remember that when I was at school in my young age, somehow some of the basics were given to us. And I guess today also. But depends of the road you choose. Some people will never work on water management. They might be careful to brush their teeth, whatever, the things correctly in order to save water and all that. And this might have a gentle impact on the entire thing, you know. But an industrialist who is a bigger consumer might also turn out, for economic reason, to save water and this and that, you know. And then you go like this, you know. Mm-hmm. So that means you have an entire society that has to become conscious of what it does, but that society needs a reference. Education is supposed to give that reference.
Mm-hmm.
That means a kind of touchstone with what you can gauge your actions in life. So that means this education has to educate everybody, so that everybody has a very clear reference on what he can or she can do.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very important. Because we just got the Waterman of India in our place. But we don't have thousands or millions of Waterman of India. But it's not true. We have billions of watermen. All the water users are watermen,
mm-hmm.
or water women,
mm-hmm.
or water children.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that they don't care. This is what is sometimes a bit frightening, this thing that they just don't care.
It is extremely frightening.
You see, frightening is okay. But it's also...
It should be an impetus to lead to an action.
No. To be afraid, yes, it's important maybe at the... It's not important, but it is what happens at the time of realization. When you walk into that... I remember when I created Harvest, I was digging, you know, like trying to understand the things and what can we do and this and that. Until one day, I somehow understood what was to be done. But I got shit scared by the dimension of the entire story.
Mm-hmm.
That means you pluck yourself in the circle at the level, not of the planet, but at the level or at least even your region. And then you integrate all the parameters that have to be considered and all that. And then, yes, you get scared, or at least you get very, very, very dizzy when you appreciate the scale
yeah.
of the story.
Yeah.
The number of people involved. And on top of it, when you become aware of the amount of falsehood that is inside, of corruption that is inside, with people very attached to it, you know. they are not going to give up just like that because you come a nice boy scout, you know, and tell them, oh, this is bad what you are doing, you know. They will just tell you, go to hell, you know. And so how do you curb the thing? How
That's
do
the
you
question.
Get the motivation to the people to change their life or to change themselves? But are they able sometimes? Are they able to change? You see, so I don't want to go like that into a big circle, but this is basically what happens.
So the fear can come into play there. I mean, because
the
some
fear comes
in,
all feelings, all sentiments, all anything can come in the picture.
Tom, I'm afraid that it's not a very rosy picture we have to look at here. It seems.
Alors, depends where you position yourself. You see, one time I was in Sudan, and I was not sure if I would come back to Auroville at that time. And a good friend of mine gave me a small note with a quotation of the mother. Concentrate on what should be. Do not concentrate on what should not be.
Look forward.
So I put that in my pocket, took my flight to Europe, and then took a flight back home. Because that was the key that I required, you know, to come home.
This is a fantastic thing, and I think we could go on indefinitely. But so just to say in conclusion, something hopeful.
But something hopeful, we are going to make it. But we are very eager to get all the water players together.
Okay,
in Auroville at least.
And so
and
it's
more, it's more easy to get them together outside than in Auroville.
Well, we
it's always the same problem. In Auroville, it seems we know each other. And then it becomes, and we have to work together. And water does not belong to anyone in particular. And there is no, you are not here to become famous. You are not here to boost your ego because you know so many things about water that you become another waterman. No, to be a waterman is to put your sleeves up and go to work and get to work and get things done, not words, actions.
Thank you, Tom. That's
You're welcome.
A good ending note.
Yes.